On this edition of the program, how to know if you have too many rules, the purpose of rules in a family, and how rules amplify values. It's all coming up. From Southwest Saskatchewan, I'm Paul.
I'm Brad.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Dallas.
And this is the Rock Solid Roundtable, a podcast to help grow strong families and help families in crisis recover. Now, here at Rock Solid, we have a student handbook that is just full of rules. And this is necessary for us to set expectations quickly for the young men coming into the program. They all come from different families. They all had different rules growing up. We're trying to get them up to speed as quickly as possible, right? They wouldn't know that, for example, you can't just go into the fridge and grab a snack whenever you want. But I like to tell the students that there's a story behind every rule. There's like a name written next to that rule. And it's quite likely that if you're reading a rule in the handbook, somebody made it so that we had to write it down. So just open up the table. Does anybody have a story of your own from home or from Rock Solid to go where you had to go? Like, I've never said it before, but here's a rule that apparently we have to have.
Well, one of my favorite ones here at Rock Solid has been words that we've had to ban, words that were not allowed to be used, at least for a period of time. And you would think, you know, ordinary words can just be a part of our normal conversation, normal language. But when you have to ban the word easy, you know, it's kind of like that Staples button, right? That was easy. It should be easy to use the word easy in a proper way. But when you get somebody that's getting amped up and you have other people that actually kind of enjoy that, and they kind of pitch across the room, easy. The last thing it does is calm the guy down. And so we had to ban the word. The word easy could no longer be used for a period of time until that generation of students passed through the program and on to other things. So that's one of my classics.
That's such a great example, because I mean, like, it's so true, right? Anytime that somebody is like escalating, anytime that somebody is like, you're in an argument with somebody, the last thing that you say to them is like, you need to calm down, which is basically what easy was, right? It was shorthand for you need to calm down.
It's like, I think some other ones we had to ban at one point too, gets offended, like they just get yelled across the room as somebody, one of the students is upset about somebody or something, and somebody just across the room, across the hall, just gets offended and just, makes everything worse. Oh man, we had a few things we had to ban.
But like you said, it's for a time, right? It's for a period. And I think even within a family, like there are some rules that maybe you make for small children that of course you wouldn't have for like bedtime, right? Bedtime is a good example. Being able to go back and revisit these rules that you have and kind of revise them, right, as kids grow older. And maybe that's a question for you to ask as you're kind of looking at the rules in your family, is when's the last time we actually evaluated these, even as a family, sitting down and talking about them?
I remember one of the rules we had to make was on the walk behind mowers that kind of have, you know, they have, you can engage kind of the wheels a little bit, so it kind of, you just have to walk behind it, you don't actually have to push it. They would like get it to like move and then sit on the engine of the walk behind, and found it was easier to just sit on it. I can't remember. I think we had a student try that once. It's like, new rule. No, like you can't sit on the walk behind mower. That is a rule we should not have to make.
Yeah. Basic safety issues.
Right? Yeah.
Kind of like the instructions you might get on a clothes iron. Do not iron clothes while wearing them. That's what some of the rules can tend to feel like. And yeah, like you said, Paul, rules need to be reassessed and reevaluated. Are they still appropriate for the age of our kids even, and so on? You know, when kids are really small, you probably have a rule, when we put you to bed, you stay in bed. Well, you probably don't have to have the same rule for a child that's notably older than that. Yeah, staying in bed is just kind of normal at that point. Rules are necessary, but we're going to get into all the nuances here as we continue on.
There is something I'm working on currently with two students. The thing is, it's not a rule that sounds kind of hilarious. It's actually a very sensible rule, but they don't see it that way. And the rule is very simple. Our high-level students are allowed passes where they can go home for a week. And I have a student who keeps asking me and his parents to be allowed to bring another student along on those passes. And he simply won't accept that, you know, that's against our policies. So I tried explaining why. The parents understand it perfectly. Both sure. sets of parents understand that why that shouldn't happen, but the students don't.
So. Why don't we start with basically the question of why do we need rules? What is the purpose? And maybe even like if you go back in civilization, in society, you know, some of the oldest successful cultures had rules, usually handed down from on high, right? Created by the priest class. In the case of the Bible, you know, Moses came down with the Ten Commandments. So what's the main reason that God gave us rules?
If we live by ourselves and can do whatever we want in isolation, perhaps we won't need rules. Even there, though, we need to interact with the physical, the material world. And we might find, for example, that it doesn't work very well to jump off a high tree. But the moment we are in relationships with others, exactly how do we navigate our shared space and our shared lives? When God created this perfect place, the garden, and he, of course, is the perfect parent, he set one rule in place. And that rule, it seemed, was too much for Adam and Eve. After the fall, how was God to help humans understand him as creator, the world he has created, and himself? And so God gave us rules, first of all, as mirrors. And they help us see him, reflected, the reflection of his character, his perfection, his goodness. They help us, or at least nudge us towards trusting him, something that we find hard to do. But rules also help us see ourselves. They reflect us as who we are. We look at the kind of behavior that seems to make perfect sense in a community. You shall not murder. And then we find that we have murderous thoughts. God also gave us rules to help as a restraint against evil. So I get into a rage. I'm about to punch somebody. And then I realize, well, you know, there are rules against violence. And the rules also set out consequences. So I may really, really, really want to hurt somebody, but I also realize that there are going to be consequences that follow on the breaking of that rule. And so even though I'm not in a good space in terms of being thinking kindly and generously about that person, I at least don't do too much harm. Rules serve as a restraint. And then most importantly, I mean, you know, we are created to glorify God, to enjoy him, and to help and bless our fellow humans. And rules guide us in doing that. They show us what is pleasing to God. They show us how to relate to each other. And they, in the richly, wonderfully complex world that we live in, a world that's both materially and relationally complex, rules guide us, help us navigate our way through.
Yeah, and you brought up the idea of consequences, right? And that's something that we're going to get into in a future podcast. We're not going to dive too deep into that, but it is important to be clear on why the rule is in place, but also what the consequence could potentially be for violating that rule.
One of the things we have here, Rock Solid, is often if and then, kind of a statement to think of, like, if you do this, then this will happen. If you do this, then this will happen, both on good and bad.
Yeah, the if and then, or the if and when,
yeah.
Either one of those statements and questions can be on both the positive and the negative, right?
Yeah.
So if you get your chore done, then we're going to head to the bridge to do some fishing and swimming. If you break the rule of cussing somebody out, then you're going to end up with some disciplinary consequences for that. So yeah, those are important in the outcome side of those things. But as Paul said, we'll get much more into that in another time.
So I guess, is there a difference then? We've kind of discussed the main reason that God gave us rules. Is there a difference between why God gave us rules and why we have rules within our own families?
I think it comes down to really the same principle. And one of the things that often comes into our mindsets, and when we think about even our families, and especially if we're working with teenagers in our homes, these two things that are often pitted against each other, which is rules or order versus freedom. Everybody loves this word freedom, but if we live as if the word freedom is meant to mean I get to do what I want when I want, it's actually chaos. So freedom turns into chaos, and it becomes really the rule of the most powerful. So if you want to live with that level of freedom, I get to do what I want when I want, it'll be whoever is the most powerful that kind of emerges in that. And so, but the other extreme isn't necessarily well worded as order, but legalism or even tyranny would be kind of a broad picture term for that. And so God doesn't want us to live under tyranny, and he doesn't want us to live in chaos. So what is it that he wants us to live in? And I often don't even like saying, well, there's a middle ground. Well, maybe it's actually something that's in a completely different framework, a completely different context. But maybe using some of the same terminology, where I really like the phrase ordered freedom. So we want to have a sense of liberty, of freedom, but not freedom to do what we want when we want, but freedom to do what we were created to do. And so when we come to understand the purposes for rules that Dan was describing, which, thank you, Dan, that was awesome and so important for us to understand, we can come into a context where there's ordered freedom. And in our homes, this can bring a real sense of sanity to our homes, to the culture of our homes, and so on. And when we have a struggle against rules, thinking that it's hindering my freedom, we also think maybe it's good to ask the question, who are rules for? Are rules for good people or for bad people? And we prefer to think of ourselves as good people. You know, a good person, I follow the rules. Well, the reason you need a rule, though, is because you are a bad person. Or we don't maybe like that terminology that much. But the Bible does actually say that all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And the Bible actually says that we prefer even to go our own way. And so recognizing that rules are, as Dan said, they're for people who have a tendency to go astray, who even prefer to do the wrong thing. We need rules that corral us and give us boundaries to do the right thing so that there would be order with freedom. So those are just some of the ways in which I like to think about the way in which we should see rules and order in our home, not through a tyrannical lens, not through a chaotic license lens, but through ordered freedom.
I'm running the Horus program right now. And so some of what you're saying, my mind immediately goes to, well, yeah, that's kind of what I'm going to be teaching some of our students even this summer through working with horses and training horses. And especially when you were talking about the kind of freedom and different things like that. A lot of people think that a wild horse is a very free horse, but I would beg to differ that a wild horse is actually one of the most miserable horses in a lot of senses, where they're totally alone. They live their life completely in fear, because everything out there is out to kill them. So they have to fend for themselves. They have to find their own food. They have to find their own water. They've got to find their own mate. And any little piece of garbage that goes across the ground is terrifying for them. Horses' mentality is run first, ask questions later. If something scares you, run, because it's probably going to kill you. But so when we take horses and train them and are able to ride them, part of my goal when I train horses is to teach that horse that, hey, I actually can free you from your anxieties. And I kind of use the example, you know, a plastic bag blows across and horses freak out. Like that's a real thing. Like if you get a plastic bag around a horse, the horse loses its mind over it because it actually thinks that plastic bag is going to kill him. And I get a horse to just stand there and learn to accept it. So if that horse is willing to submit to me, I have rules and expectations for a horse. If that horse is willing to submit to me and trust me, I can actually help it overcome its fears and anxieties and to live a life where I care for it. If it gets hurt in the wild, it just dies. But if a horse gets hurt here, well, I'm going to take care of it. I'm going to mend it. I'm going to feed it. I'm going to water it. I'm going to make sure everything that this horse needs for a good, relaxing and really free from fear and anxiety, is what my offer to this horse is. And so bringing guys into that as I do that is really a neat opportunity I have. But again, it's that horse has to submit to me, my rules and expectations. And if it chooses to do so, I will give it those things.
So what happens in families if you do not have these rules? Dallas already kind of touched on, like, you know, chaos versus order a little bit. What could you expect from a family that that didn't have order? Or that didn't have rules? What would you expect that family's average day kind of to look like?
I think even just going on to what I was talking about with the horses, like I think that's a home filled with anxiety. You never know what to expect. Like there is no order. Nothing's given. You know, you don't actually know what to expect out of your day. You don't, you know, there might be this expectation. You did something this time and didn't get in trouble for it, but you get in trouble for it a different day. But there's just, it's all the expectations of the home are all so fluid, and you know, it depends on the person beside you, your sibling or your parents' mood, whether you're going to get in trouble for something or not get in trouble with something. The home is run by emotion instead of a baseline understanding of this is who we are as a family. Here's the expectations. It's all cleared and laid out so that no matter what mom and dad are feeling, no matter what siblings or child is feeling, there's this expectation that the family lives by. But if that's not there, it's just all over the map. Nobody knows what to expect.
Yeah, I think that's a good statement that you made, Brad, that the home would end up being run by emotion. mm-hmm. And that can be so unstable, and nobody knows where the sure ground is. And so, you know, I think wherever a home is at today, so those of you listening to this, you know, doing a real assessment, what is the basis for understanding what is acceptable in your home? Is it the whims of mom or dad? Is it one of the kids, maybe a teenager, that has kind of maybe the most emotional charge at any given time, and so everybody kind of walks around on eggshells around that individual? Or is there kind of a stable standard and an understanding of who you are as a family, your core value system, and the culture that matters to you? So I think those are some of the things that need to really be assessed and be honest with each other, particularly as spouses, and then even family meetings as to, hey, how are we doing? You know, are we being true to who we are as a family with the way that we're living life, and even the expectations that are in our home?
I'll throw it to you here, Dan. A question that I kind of have here is sort of, how is it that the rules that we have amplify or express the values within the family? Like, how can we find a rule that kind of almost expresses who we are? Does that make sense as a question?
Who we are, what we value, whom we value, is going to be fundamental to decisions we make, patterns of behavior, and those are going to be expressed in de facto rules. If our whole sort of purpose for existing is to make a good impression to the neighbors or extended family or friends, then you know, everything we do, everything we choose is going to be with the question, okay, well, now what are they going to think? Hmm. And that seems a rather sad way to live, but it's going to be what sets our rules. Conversely, if we have a different purpose for living, if we are building our lives on trying to understand who God is and what he wants of us because he created us, and we believe that he's the best source of good energy and sound ethics, then that's going to set in place a very different approach to understanding how are we to live our lives. If when it comes to, say, for example, should we buy this car? If my whole or my primary motive is to make sure that I impress those around me, then I'm going to choose that kind of car. If, on the other hand, my primary motive is, well, God has given me these resources, how can I best use it to serve him? Then I'm going to make a whole different set of calculations. So I guess underlying, maybe, and this is underlying your question, the shaping and expressing the rules are deep principles for living.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because I remember there was a story that I heard. This is, you know, back in college, this is a story that a professor heard. So this is like secondhand sort of story here. So
best take that kind for, of stories.
Yeah, take that for what you will. But talking about sort of like the, what do you value and why are these rules in place? Is it about creating order within the family? And if it's about creating order within the family, why do you want that order? Is it because you're trying to set an impression for the outside? Or is there something deeper than just, you know, we want to look good for the neighbors, right? And so this story was basically a police officer escorting a teen home to his house after they caught him vandalizing the school or something like that, right? Spray painting a wall or something similar. Knocks on the door, you know, the mother opens it up and the officer like hands the child over and says, you know, this is what we saw. You know, we caught your son vandalizing school property. She said to this police officer, no, officer, you're wrong. And the police officer just kind of like blinked a couple of times and like, no, we caught your son vandalizing school property. And she says, no, officer, you're wrong. My son would not do that. And like, she was just adamant, right? This is not something that my family would do. And it's sort of, you know, like what mattered most wasn't the truth in that moment. It was the perception of the family, right? So it may seem like an odd question, but why should a family have rules at sort of like that deep foundational level?
Yeah. I mean, I guess one of the first thing that comes to mind too is, well, what's our family culture, right? What does the family value, and therefore what kind of culture does that family live in, right? So, I think the rules we're going to set in place as parents are going to outline that, right? So if your family, let's say, values quality time, okay, so that's just kind of something that mom and dad have decided, hey, quality time is something this family values. We spend time together doing things together. You know, a corresponding rule might be, okay, so we limit the amount of screen time every individual gets in this home is X amount. That's it.
And also when they might have access to those screens, right?
Also, yeah.
So are we having dinner together and everybody's on their phones or whatever the case might be, depending on the age of our kids and so on. But just looking around the room from time to time and just saying, how does what's happening right now lean into our values or lean out of our values, or what we say is our values, right? Or even doing an honest assessment where we would say, okay, my top values or our family values are these things, whether it's five things or three things. And then do an honest assessment over the next 2 weeks. You know, what are we spending our time doing? What are we spending our money on? How is our family function? And overlap that with the values that we say we have. And do they match? And then if they don't match, then being humble enough to really get down to basics and go, what does actually matter to us? And are we willing to do some of the hard work to reorganize ourselves. And it really does start with us as parents. Yep. To role model that. Are we willing to give up something that maybe we value, but when it really comes down to it, it leans away from our family value instead of into our family value. And so it's a big part of that is also role modeling the value that we say we have. I think another principle that is important at different phases of a child's life is this context of the moral reason why. And so when we give a child a rule, in one sense, what I say is what I say, I mean it, and I want it done, and I shouldn't have to deal with any arguing. And that's that. But on another level, how much more important it is to reach a child's heart by giving them a reason. Why was this rule important? And in a sense, leaning into what we've already been talking about, giving them the moral reason why it matches our values and why it's important. But even beyond our family values, if we are a Christian family, how it matches God's values and leaning in towards that. And that can shape differently through the different stages of childhood and teen years as well.
So I have smaller children, and there's always going to be a little bit of that back and forth, a little bit of give and take there, right? But why is it that it seems like teens in particular struggle with rules?
In terms of the life stage and where teens are, teens are reaching for independence. They're trying to understand who they are as their own persons, not just mom's and dad's child. They're trying to become independent. And at the same time, parents are trying to set boundaries. And so there is almost inevitably going to be a certain amount of conflict there. But also the physiological reality that part of our brain that handles so-called executive functions, making decisions, remembering things, trying to control ourselves, paying attention, making plans, multitasking, and even facing up to life experiences and saying, maybe I should do things differently next time. That part of our brain is still developing in teens. On the outside, they look pretty much, some of them can look even bigger and stronger than their adult parents. But in terms of that part of their brain that handles those executive functions, the prefrontal cortex, it won't be fully developed until about age 25. And so that doesn't mean the teens can't follow rules, but they're going to approach rules very differently. And couple that with the reality that they're reaching for independence, and they're going to push back against boundaries. So along with that, there are other things that are probably going on in our teenagers' lives. Some of them may be very stressed out in school. There may be a lot of academic pressure. Workloads may be increasing in class. Some of them do suffer from depression, anxiety, and ADHD is very often talked about these days. There are learning disabilities. They may be facing bullying, whether direct or through social media. And then another factor which is quite often neglected is, are they eating properly and resting properly? For body image reasons or other reasons, a teen may be, or simply to feel in control, a teen may not be eating properly, and they then may simply be filling up on snacks, which makes things even worse. And all those have been shown to directly affect people's moods and the way their brains function.
Sleep is a huge one there, like you said, too, yeah. Like, I think that most teens are, like, almost chronically sleep-deprived.
There you go, absolutely. A famous study showed that parents who enforce a bedtime of at least 10 o'clock in the night or earlier, their teens were much less likely to be depressed or consider suicide than teens who were allowed to stay up past midnight and especially you're allowed to use their devices.
Yeah, I think that's a really good one to take note of too. Like the devices, you know, sometimes I've heard this rule, you know, when you go to bed, put your devices to bed and in a different room. And each family has to decide what they're going to do with that. Mm-hmm. But teens that are texting well into the night or in the middle of the night or waking each other up in the middle of the night, they're not functioning well when they get up in the morning and throughout their day.
And add to the fact that physiologically, the part of their brain that the prefrontal cortex is still not developed adequately and won't be till they're about 25. If they're sleep deprived and nutrition deprived, that's going to be even harder for them. So it may help with teens to explain. They are able to process such explanations. They may not always agree with it. They may push back against it. But to help them say that parental rules are a way of reducing the load on a part of their brain that is still not capable of making the kinds of decisions that they're reaching towards making. Affirming the fact that they're reaching towards independence by saying, you know, let these rules help you towards that. Your brain hasn't yet caught up with, and I'm most teens probably hear this in school anyway, in biology classes and so on. But, you know, explaining to them that your brain is still catching up with the ability to make such decisions. Help us reduce the load on that part of your brain with these rules. But it's so important that when we set rules as parents, that we role model our own respect for those rules. So am I telling my kid not to lie, but then the kid hears me tell somebody on the phone, oh, you know, I'm at such and such a place when I'm really at home. Do I tell my kid to respect rules, and then my kid, when driving with me, sees that I break traffic laws when I can get away with it? Yeah, it may be the case that a lot of other people are doing it, but then what am I role modeling?
Yeah, to be no better than the world, basically.
Exactly.
While you were talking, Dan, I thought of a great resource, a book called The Teenage Brain, A Neuroscientist's Survival Guide to Raising Adolescents and Young Adults by Frances E. Jensen. It's been a few years since I read the book, but I found it to be, the research to be quite insightful, actually. And so if people are into books for learning some of these things and just getting a bit of a picture of what's going on in your teenager's brain. And you would think that since we all were teenagers, that we'd understand it quite well. But I think we happily exit that time and try to even forget how chaotic it was to have a teenage brain. I think another aspect that can come into play a little bit is what are the particular tendencies of our young person, of our teenager, and communicating well with them, particularly in non-conflict scenarios, right? Yeah. So we're going to have conflict, especially around rules or consequences and those kinds of things, but finding ways to have good conversations about what you see in their lives regarding how they interact with the world and just even what they tend towards that will either bring kind of a good future, a good outcome, or what will really create a problem. So, you know, we can talk about some things like FAS, fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, or other deficits that a young person might have. And, you know, sometimes these young people that have some real deficits, they're willing to interact honestly about them and just have that interaction to say, hey, you know, for the next probably even 10 years, you're going to need some really stable adults in your life to help you navigate some of the decisions. Or a young person that tends to be a lot more of an emotional roller coaster. Hey, do you realize how much of a roller coaster you are? And most of the time, they'll be honest. They'll be like, yeah, actually, I do. Do you make good decisions when you're really emotional? No, I make terrible decisions. And in a non-conflict conversation, often a young person will be open to that and just kind of help them to see that, you know, you're probably going to level out at about 25 a lot. But really, you might always need to have people around you that are really quite stable and that you can really rely on. In fact, we all do. We need people around us. And so even as you said, role modeling, Dan, we need to even role model that, mm-hmm. you know, as adults, we don't necessarily make major decisions without kind of checking in with people that we appreciate and would even consider to be mentors or advisors for us. And so, mm-hmm. so I think all of those things are really important to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, backing up on what Dallas said earlier about, you know, how we approach our teens. And that's the other rock solid emphasis on relational influence. So there could be the best calibrated rules in the world, but if we have no relational influence with our teens, they're not going to hear those rules. Perhaps it's important to involve our teens themselves in creating those rules. One of the things I used to do, whether with team members or with my own children, was to say, okay, look, we can discuss the rules during a family meeting, but when we're out at the mall or wherever, that's not the time to negotiate the rules. So yes, but we do have family meetings where we can negotiate the rules and discuss them. And then, of course, another one might be to make age-appropriate rules. So when there are siblings in the home, for them to see that, you know, the rules are adjusted as the children are older. An example that I've read in several places is when you're out and about, staying in touch with mom and dad by text. That's a rule that should be, I think, standard, whether it's a 16-year-old or a 13-year-old. But you might obviously give a 16-year-old a later curfew time than a 13-year-old. So making them age appropriate. And again, I would go back to the importance of, along with the relational influence, the importance of role modeling. It's as with all humans, teens too are going to pay more attention to what they see us do than what we say. And so the importance of them seeing that our values are rock solid, that we base our rules on those values and we really live by those. And of course, apologizing even to our teens when we mess up, because we will mess up.
Maybe especially to our teens.
Yeah,
for sure.
When they see us express a level of humility, it goes a long ways. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I kind of like what you're saying, Dan. Like, I think we can even come to a point where we can reevaluate some of the rules that we have in the home as our kids get older, right? They you know, sometimes like you have so many rules, like you just treat me like a child. Like, okay, well, you know, maybe we can sit down and have a family meeting, right? And to kind of evaluate, okay, well, what are some of the rules that you think are unreasonable? Can we talk about it in a civilized way and actually have that meaningful discussion and go about that? And I think that's easier too. So, you know, if you are listening to this and kind of have a young family that you're bringing up, as you raise your kids with, you know, these rules, you might reach a point where you kind of go, okay, maybe it's time that we reevaluate some of these rules. Are our kids old enough that we don't really need to have this as a rule anymore? They kind of have that expectation already even built into kind of who they are. And we trust them not to make foolish decisions, that we used rules to keep them from making those foolish decisions, right? But if you're maybe a family that's in a bit of struggle right now and you know, with teenagers, okay, well, how do we create some rules that might help bring balance to our family right now in some sort of crisis? How do we go about doing that well too? And I think a big part of that too is that sit down, hey, we need to meet. Like, I kind of like what you said in a previous podcast, Dallas, that, let's, you know, pay your kid to go have coffee with you to build some relationship and just go, hey, let's just go have some time together. And let's also talk about some of maybe the issues that you might have right now that in a family. I want to hear what you have to say. I've got some things I'd like to talk to you about and to kind of try to evaluate, hey, how do we bring in some rules here to our house that might create more peace? And like you were saying, Dan, like, hey, let us help you take some of the load off of you. Our home's in chaos right now. You feel it. You feel that stress and anxiety. I feel it. You know, us as parents, we're feeling it, the stress and anxiety. Can we meet and try to mitigate some of that? Can we create some expectation in our home? And then have that relational piece where, like, again, you said, Dan, it's got to be this family working together where parents are holding themselves accountable. We get some buy-in from our teens and hold them accountable to it, and just kind of try to create a basis of togetherness as we try to walk forward this family unit.
It's probably important also just to qualify that, you know, pay your kid to have coffee with you thing. That's kind of like a last resort thing.
Yes.
It's not like your first step yeah. is like, here's $20 if you come with me. They might be like, boy, I would have come with you if you just said you were going to get coffee. It's, you know, it's sort of like if you cannot get their the buy-in in any other way, then, you know, you kind of go to that sort of extreme level. It's last resort, not first sort of thing. But what are some of the overarching principles that rules can kind of fall under rather than having to spell out every single expectation? I remember there was a time at Rock Solid where it felt like every time we went into staff meeting, it was like, oh, here's all the things that happened this week. Okay, what are the new rules that we need to implement in order to stop the... And it's like we were dealing with the symptom and not the problem, right? Mm. So what are some of these overarching principles that can deal with, you know, the problems that we can expect to come up in a family without having to play whack-a-mole with, you know, individual rules?
Right.
Yeah, and I remember those times well, Paul. It was like you could tell... Every time we'd come out of staff meeting and go to lunch, the students were despondent because they knew there was some new rules that were coming. Every time it was a Monday with a staff meeting morning, lunchtime rolls around and you could just see it in their faces. Oh, there's more rules again. So anyways, I think Brad, you were gonna hop in on that question.
Well, and so yeah, kind of what we do at Rock Solid in our in-house program is kind of our overarching expectation is honesty, respect, and obedience. Those are the things that we expect from our students. And obviously, guys that first come here aren't going to do that well, but that's something, hey, we expect that you're going to grow into those things. And here's how you can do that. Sorry, I got that mixed backward. I expect out of them maturity, responsibility, and charity. Sorry, that's what we expect kind of them to grow into. We want them to grow into mature, responsible, and charitable people. So that's our goal for our students. Okay, so here's how you're going to do that. You're going to be honest, you're going to be respectful, and you're going to be obedient to the rules and to the staff and to the program that we've set for you. Us as staff, we help students and hold them accountable to those things through what we were talking about earlier, role modeling, relational influence, and authority. And we have to do all three of those things at the same time. Authority doesn't work without relationship or role modeling. Role modeling doesn't work without relationship or authority. And a relationship is very shallow anyways when we don't have, especially in the context of when there's authority, right? To have a relationship with somebody in authority over you, which is a good and valuable thing. But there's often some role modeling that happens there and some authority there. We understand that. So we use all three of those things equally. But if we can grow our students in maturity, responsibility, and charity, as they grow in that, we actually have to implement the rules of Rock Solid Refuge less and less and less. Because as they become more mature, more responsible, and more charitable, they just naturally conduct themselves with those characteristics, that the overflow of that is peace and just goodness to those around them. That creates a culture of genuine people who care for one another.
So, how would you implement those in a family?
So when you think of each of those components, and you have a rule that you think is important, I think it's really important to make the connection. So which one of those character qualities does this connect to?
Right.
Yeah. Maturity, responsibility, honesty, respect, and obedience as far as character qualities. And guaranteed every rule will have something to do with one of those character qualities that we're hoping them that they will grow into. And also, you know, how is it mature responsible or charitable, whatever the scenario is. And so one of the examples here at Rock Solid, I went into the workshop, the maintenance shop, the one day, and quite honestly, it was not very presentable. And so I wasn't happy to see that. And so as I approached the boys, I just simply put forward those principles. I just said, how is it mature, responsible, or charitable that the shop is kind of scattered with tools, things haven't been put away, it's a mess, it's dirty, it's not swept up. Would somebody coming in here look at it and go, oh, this must be a very mature, responsible, and charitable group? No, absolutely not. And so finding ways to make a very clear and direct connection to each of the expectations and the rules that we would have to those, to each of those principles.
Yeah. In my own home, you know, my children, they're fairly young, you know, they have their chores, you know, they're to, you know, one of my young girls is responsible. Hey, it's your job to clear the table, to put dishes in the dishwasher. Another one daughter, hey, it's your job to sweep the floor. You know, that's your responsibility. Hey, you know, you guys are responsible to keep your rooms clean. You want to go and do this? Well, is your room clean? No. Okay. Well, go clean it first. And then you can ask, you know, questions about those things. And then it's neat to see as they grow to them, get excited. They'll come running up like, oh yeah, I did this. And then I noticed that this was messy. So I went and cleaned this. And then, you know, and they come excited about these achievements that they've done. But really, they're actually just growing in that maturity where they see an issue, they fix it, and then are proud that they accomplished it. And that's in my young children. And we see that even a lot with our students, right? Where they're like, oh man, look how clean I made my bed. Like my bed by far is the best, you know, bed today or whatever, right? When they start taking pride in their space, and that's often sometimes, you know, something that was very lacking before, but we have these rules, you know, one of our rules at Rock Solid, well, you have to clean your room every day. Every morning you clean. And then there's a room inspection. Okay, who cleaned your rooms? And there's consequences if your room is a disaster and you've left your clothes everywhere and you didn't make your bed and different things like that. But it kind of becomes this challenge to them where they kind of get excited, almost a competition. Hey, how well can I make my bed? And then when they do it really well, it's like there's this pride and achievement. But yeah, finding rules that you can even do that where, you know, it's a very mature and responsible thing to make your bed. Hey, it's a mature and responsible thing to clean the table. You ate, clean it. To do the dishes, you ate, clean it, right? That's mature, that's responsible, and it brings the family together.
One more quick question before we wrap up here. We had talked earlier about like the chaotic family being ruled by emotion. One of the issues in such a family is the inconsistency and the fluidity of the rules, right? You're never sure, hey, is this going to be enforced? Is it not? Like what's, you know, there's just that uncertainty and anxiety that comes along with it. So how fluid can we be with the rules? Do we need to be, you know, very stringent? Tyrannical was a word that came up earlier. Or like how flexible can or should we be with them?
I think in a lot of sense, it has to do with the maturity of the child. So if we have this kind of culture and this expectation where people kind of follow it and things are met on a general basis, kind of, you know, expectations are there and they're met regularly, you know, and something gets forgotten, a rule is not enacted, and it sometimes is simple, hey, you didn't do this, or you did do this and you're not allowed to, whatever rule it was that they was broken. Hey, don't do that again. Like, I'm not going to give you consequences, but you know, the expectation, don't do it anymore. And a lot of times that's enough. But if there's a consistent kind of attitude of immaturity, irresponsibility, selfishness, then you have a much more consistent, okay, here's the deal. Every time, there's no grace here in some senses. So that, you know, again, I'll relate it to what we do at Rock Solid. When a student first comes into the program, they kind of have a week, we call their grace week, where they, you know, wrap their head around the rules. We're not going to give them any consequences. We're just going to teach them the expectation. And then after that, it's like, hey, here's the deal, man. Every time you swear at somebody, you're going to get consequences for that because you can't treat somebody else disrespectfully. Like, so they get consequences every time. And as they learn, it becomes a part of their character that they don't do that. They might slip up in that. They might stub their toe or something and accidentally swear. All it takes is for staff to go, hey, you know the expectation. Don't do that. but we don't have to give a consequence every time. So I think honestly it varies in the culture of the home. Is the culture chaotic? Then sometimes we need to just establish, here's what the standard is for everybody every time. And if the culture is not chaotic, it can be a little bit more fluid as we put the onus more on the child to hold themselves accountable.
Building on that, Brad, with children in general and with teens in particular, I think it's very important to involve them in the whole process of setting out consequences as mm-hmm. well. So we discuss ahead of time, okay, these are the rules, we really value these rules, and these are the consequences when those rules are not followed. And then they have already bought in to the consequences.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it is really valuable to involve them in that process. And I think even a part of that, Dan, involving them in that is giving them a vision for the future kind of beyond and past just the rule itself. I remember, I think it was Dr. Redwine, who is has been our counselor and family camp speaker many, many times. He tells the story of when he was a young person, his dad told him he no longer had a curfew. And I forget if it was when he was 15 or 16 or whatever. And at a time when a lot of us would think, oh, kids really need a curfew. But the expectation was so clear of what the value system of the family and the lifestyle choices would be. Like if you sleep in the next day because you were out all night, you're going to wake up and I'm going to make sure you're going to wake up and you're going to wish you had slept. but giving them a vision of the effect of making poor choices mm-hmm. and giving them some of the opportunity, a certain amount of opportunity for sure, to fail and then get it right beyond that moment. Mm-hmm. Learning by experience is definitely something that is a key factor for teens as well, mm-hmm. but also quite scary for parents.
Mm-hmm. Any final thoughts?
So as I was thinking about how to maybe wrap this podcast up, a couple of thoughts, a couple of comments or statements that we sometimes use here. Rules without relationship equals rebellion. But the reality is that relationship without rules also gives rebellion. Mm. The same outcome is if we try to do one without the other on either side of that. And then the other thing that I think when we think about rules, the term authority, and we've used the term authority in this conversation, and for us to make sure that when we use that term, we very clearly see that through the lens of blessing. In Matthew 28, Jesus is about to leave this planet. He's lived his life. He died. He spent 3 days and 3 nights in the tomb. He's risen again, and he's about to leave this planet. And he says, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given unto me. Now, therefore, go and spread my goodness," essentially, is what he said. You know, teaching them to obey all that I've commanded, sharing the gospel, baptizing people, essentially spreading his kingdom, spreading his goodness. And his goodness is an absolute blessing. And so when Jesus makes that statement that all authority in heaven and earth has been given unto us, it's a statement of blessing. And so when we think about exercising authority, even in our own homes as parents, that we have a starting point that God has given me a position of authority, not as a hammer or a mechanism to get my way, but rather as a tool to steer and to bring blessing into my household, to bring ordered freedom that would put on display God's goodness and his character.
And that'll wrap it up for us today. The Rock Solid Roundtable is created by Rock Solid Refuge, a Christian nonprofit dedicated to restoring adolescent lives and ministering to their families. If you want to make a difference in the lives of Canadian teens struggling with life-controlling issues, visit our website at rocksolidrefuge.com. And we want to hear from you as well. Send any questions or recommendations for the panel to partners@rocksolidrefuge.com. And please share this program with friends, family, and clergy and let them know that we're out here. On behalf of Bran.
Yeah, Bran.
Sure, that could be my new nickname.
And on behalf of Brad, Dan, and Dallas, my name is Paul. Thank you for joining us, and we hope to see you soon.